Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Well, what's going on, folks? Hopefully you survived your Christmas day, your holiday. It's weird being on the week, right in the middle of the week, because a lot of people are actually back at work. We are a few of them, even if everyone else was off, we would definitely be here because Clay Travis definitely would not be here the day after a holiday. So he is out again. He'll be back tomorrow. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Jason Martin and Jeff Schwartz with you. Jeff Schwartz at Jeff Schwartz. I'm Jason Martin at J Mart Zone. We are live from the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Geico.com is the website that you want to find. All right, Jeff. Is the tree still standing in your home? That's the first question I got to ask you right off the gate.
The tree was started being dismantled yesterday at 7:45 a.m. It's out on the side of the road by about 8:15. And I'll tell you what, man, I dragged this thing out there. So, you know, when you're bringing the tree in, you're very careful, of course, right? About, you know, you have to pick it up and drag it and, like, make sure yes. It comes in. When you drag it out, you don't care if limbs fall out. So I just dragged that bad boy out to the curb. And I'll tell you what, I'm out of shape from my old pulling days and pushing days of sleds and humans. I'll tell you what, few things trigger people on social media quite like politics and the idea of taking a tree out before people deem it's necessary to do so. People were very, very upset that we took the tree down, but we did Christmas. Like we gave our kids their Hanukkah gifts essentially in the morning. And that was it. Christmas was done. So we packed everything up and we put it away. And I think, I'm not even sure this might be even worse. We might, because the tree is dead as can be. I mean, it is like dead. We might just cut it up and like have a little bonfire later this weekend with the tree. Because it's not being picked up till next week. So is that even worse to like use the wood to just make a little bonfire and have some fun with it?
I mean, that's not very festive, is what I would say about it. But I know the holiday's basically over. It is. I understand. Like, at least your wife didn't drag it out herself. And my wife was asking me yesterday, because she's fascinated by this whole thing with your situation with the Christmas tree, and just asked, do you guys also go full savage and just drag it out with the ornaments falling off it too?
So,
like, do you actually put those in boxes and have some kind of keepsakes?
There were like five ornaments on the top of the tree that are just still on the tree in the side of the road.
That right there is
the rest of them we put tough. Away. I mean, we have 100, probably over 100 on there. I mean, the rest of them we put away in a box, but I think my wife said basically they're now the trees. We broke some on the way out. Dude, it's just like the whole process. Look, I did not grow up with a tree. One of the first years we were together in our old house, we didn't have a tree, and I could tell it bothered her because she's used to having a tree. Just the spirit of the holidays, I think it's more for her. So we got a tree, and ever since then, like I like having it. It symbolizes to me, like, you know, the holidays are here and it's nice to have. And but then my wife gets so tired of it so quickly that it feels like a big hassle to put everything away. Like, why? Like, if we do all this, our tree's like 13 feet tall. Why don't we just get a baby tree then if you're going to be over it in a month? But yeah, it's my wife is, she's strong-willed, man. I remember this. Before we had our first child, we had Alex on July 11th in 2014. July 10th, okay? My wife is 9 months pregnant, and she needed to get something from behind the fridge. And she just moved the fridge herself. And I was like, what are you doing? She goes, I need to move the fridge. And she just grabbed, 9 months pregnant, just grabbed the fridge and freaking moved it, man. Like, she didn't care about anything. She didn't care about norms or anything else. And she wanted the tree down, so the tree is down. It's very, very simple.
Well, at least it made it to the holiday this year.
Yeah, last year. See, last year was rough. Last year was December 23rd, and I think remember Thanksgiving was early last year. This year it was late. We get it the day before Thanksgiving. See, partly because we get it that day because my dad's in town that week, and so he can help me bring the tree. My wife can't carry the tree in, so we do it when my dad's in town, and I get Wednesday night off from work typically, and so it ends up working out well. But look, we still have the spirit, right? My kids. We had an elf on the shelf for the first time this year. It was really funny. One morning, my son, the elf, was holding a dreidel.
Son
yelled at it and said that, he called the elf Christmas. Christmas, you know we're Jewish. It's just the kids, like, just, they love, the elf was everywhere. We put the elf all over the house. My first year doing the elf was kind of fun. My kids, I mean, we watched Christmas movies yesterday. We've got them into, they watch Home Alone for the first time. Watch Elf.
Excellent.
They watch Home Alone, Elf. Yeah, my kids now have a whole plan of how to, like, stop intruders now.
Isn't that what your daughter said, that she knew exactly how to handle herself?
Yeah, but I mean,
that got happened.
Yeah, but her way is a little bit like what a monkey might do with her with his or her bodily fluids. And then, dude, I'll tell you what. Clay tweeted this out yesterday, and you'll learn this, Jason, when you have kids eventually. This Ryan kid, man, he is taking over the world. And my kids got Ryan toys, and they could not be more excited about getting Ryan toys. This treasure chest thing is like $100. It's crazy. They love this Ryan kid.
Well, I mean, I guess it's no different than anything else. Whatever the fad is, whatever's popular, as long as they dig it, it doesn't really matter. As long as it's not harmful or anything else.
So you will have your tree up for how long?
I think we will probably get it down in New Year's. That's my assumption.
Real tree or artificial
tree? No, it's artificial. I've never had a real tree in my entire life.
It's kind of fun. I mean, you have to water it, though. I mean, it's like an actual thing you have to take care of. Someone tweeted me yesterday with a very specific rules for trees. Like, you have to keep it up for a certain number of days because that's how many days this happened for. And someone replied about, like, I don't think he worries about that.
Yeah.
But, man, people were really upset. They thought it was very weird. Is it weird? I guess it is.
No. I mean, there are some people that take their tree down on Christmas Day. Now, when your wife's dragging it out on Christmas Eve, that seems a little excessive.
But she kind of just does what she wants. So it's kind of
right. Like, she should.
She's very, very free spirited in that manner. No, we saw it was fun. I mean, the kids, it was awesome. My son woke up our girl because we got her a bike. And so he came downstairs. He saw the bike. He ran upstairs, woke her up so she could come see the bike. It was very cute. It's just nice to be able to do, you know, dual holidays. Kids are pumped about it. We made the Santa, the cookies for Santa, and left out the milk, and we had a good time. It was a nice family day.
Yeah, my wife told me yesterday we're not doing Elf on a Shelf. She's already kind of made the decision. She's just like,
why?
It's a hassle. I don't know. I guess because you have to worry about moving it every single day.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't look. My wife did all of that, or a friend came over the house and did some of that too. My kids are upset when it wasn't moved, but
right.
They had like fun with it. I guess. I mean, I don't know. It was moved all over the house. My wife put in funny spots. The last night she put it in one of my daughter's old pairs of baby underwear, put it in there and put it like on the wall and said, like, basically the elf was wearing underwear. It was, I don't know, just random stuff. We put it on toys and all over the house, and they liked it, but it's kind of a hassle. Yeah. Here's the thing about it, Jason, is when you have kids is you do things for the kids you wouldn't do for yourself. Right. So like you say that now, we're never going to have an elf. But then your three-year-old says, "Mommy, Daddy, why don't we have an elf?" And you're going to buy an elf. Like, that's just the way. Like, you just
Well, I mean, if the kid wants an elf, we'll have an elf. Like, I understand how that works. So did Clay talk about Ryan?
Oh, he tweeted out his five-year-old. I was like, "Yeah, buddy, that's my five-year-old is all about." He has my kid has a Ryan figurine. This is collected over like the last year. He's got like these Ryan little figurines. He's got this Ryan Chester chest. He got a Ryan, two Ryan eggs. I want to say. He watches the show when it's on Nickelodeon. He has his iPad. Whenever we give it to him, he somehow finds Ryan's toy review. He loves that kid, man.
Well, like I said, it takes all kinds and it takes all sorts of different things. People would have thought what I liked when I was a kid was dumb too, like the adults in the room would have as well. It's seemingly crazy that a kid that reviews toys has, you know, 20-some million dollar net worth or whatever it is, but I guess more power to you.
I mean, look, it's a different time. I mean, look, my kids can work iPads better than probably I can. I mean, they're like wizards on the thing, and it's, I don't know. I don't know what parents did before iPads. Like, I don't know how my parents flew with me as hyper as I was as a kid without an iPad. I mean, it makes parenting a little bit easier in that regard. But then you have to balance, right? Of course, the technology, how much TV you watch. You know, one thing that, you know, when I was a kid, we had two TVs in the house. That was it, right? And I know some only had one, or some had none, or some had more. And I had to watch sports. Like, that was my choice, right? Like, I was only going to watch sports because my dad was watching sports. And now with my son and daughter, like, they can, you know, we have more TVs than two, and they can just go into another room and watch cartoons. Don't have to, you know, watch sports. I wish my son would watch more sports with me, but there's other options, right, in the house. And so, yeah, this is life is technology now. It's wild.
There were 5 NBA games yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
There was a quintuple header. It was basketball-mas or something like that. They were trying to market a name for it and everything else that was going on. The big game, obviously, was the Battle of L.A., with the Clippers getting the better of the Lakers, 111-106. And LeBron James,
I know.
LeBron's getting old. You know how we know he's getting old? He's pulling his groin repeatedly. Last year, he pulled it on Christmas Day against the Warriors, and it cost, how many days? He missed like 3 weeks, I think, with that thing, at least. Then he had it like 5 or 6 days ago. He felt good going into this game, and he re-aggravated when Patrick Beverley caught him below the belt early in that game, and reports are he's going to miss more time. LeBron James is not 25 years old anymore if he's pulling his groin doing athletic things. I could pull my groin going out and doing athletic things. LeBron James doing it. LeBron James is a guy that we got used to never being hurt, and that's just not the case anymore. And yet again, Kawhi Leonard shows up in a moment where people are paying attention. Ain't no load management going on yesterday. Kawhi just goes out there, balls out, puts up 35, and beats the Lake Show.
So I watched the second half of that game. I was out and came home, and I'm a Lakers fan, and I was kind of pumping my chest out, puffing it out when they were up by 13 in the third quarter. And then, look, Kawhi played much better down the stretch, and this is why he was so coveted this offseason.
Yeah.
He made all the shots. He was, I think, 8 for 8 or 7 for 7 on foul shots, maybe even 9 for 9. Clippers made their last 14 foul shots, I want to say, in a row. The Lakers couldn't buy a three-pointer in the last 5 minutes of the game. Honestly, it's a LeBron guy. When Pat Beverley strips you at the end of the game, and then you come out 2 minutes later and say that you have a groin injury, I feel like it's convenient sometimes, some of these injuries that he has. I do think that this is more like, this feels like a baseball DL type issue, or just your veteran goes on the DL in the middle of the season and just kind of gets like 15 days off, right? 2 weeks off. Like, it feels like LeBron's just saying, look, my groin, it's not perfect right now. We just played our big game of the year on Christmas for the NBA. I'm going to take 2 weeks off, right? Kawhi's over there taking, 3 months off of basketball. I'm going to take 2 weeks off and kind of get ready for the push down the backstretch. I mean, they've done a great job so far. They're the best record in the Western Conference. So it feels like this is kind of what is happening right now, just maybe a planned 2 week kind of rest cycle, because the Lakers have been going hard so far. And with his age, I'm actually surprised that he's played as much as he has so far this season.
Yeah, and it's weird when you look up and you realize the Lakers have played 31 games and the Clippers have played 33. I would say that there is a large quotient of people who have seen precisely one game from both of those two teams, maybe two if they watched opening day. And this gets to the old Outkick mantra, the old Outkick idea that the NBA season shouldn't have started until yesterday.
You mean October 16th?
Because many people check out until right now.
You mean October 16th is not a great day to start the NBA schedule?
I mean, when football is season. Rolling, why in the world? I mean, look, Cats made $6.5 million at the box office this past week, right? I mean, let's just, I don't know how much, I know you're aware, Jeff, but if you're out there and you're like, that sounds like a lot of money, trust me, it's not.
That's no money for the budget.
It's absolutely hideous.
For the budget.
Why would you want to release your movie against Star Wars? Why would anybody want to put their movie out the same day as Star Wars? There's no reason to do that. That's like trying to counter-program the Super Bowl and expecting to get ratings out of it during the football game and not just programming like dogs at halftime, where you're actually going to get something done. So the NBA trying to get this done in October and November, and I'm a hoophead, and I love the NBA, and I've barely even watched the first couple of months of the season because I know how much more there is to come.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have a groin injury from LeBron James on Christmas Day if he hadn't played until yesterday.
Well, you know, the issue with me with the NBA is, and I'll catch games every now and then. I mean, I work at night, so if something's on, I'm a Lakers fan, so they don't play very often in this time zone at a good time. So I've caught a couple Lakers games so far this year. That was probably the most I'd watched of the Lakers at any point. And here's the reason why, Jason. The reason why. These two teams will meet again in the Western Conference Final. Even Kawhi said after the game, he goes, look, you know, I think they asked him, like, are you guys the Kings of L.A. now or whatever? And he's like, no, this is one game. Like, what is it? I know they beat him early in the season, too. But what's this matter? Like, so they're going to meet again in the Western Conference Final. No one's beating these two teams in the playoffs. I mean, until they play each other, obviously. And so that's the thing with the NBA is tough. If you're just a casual fan like I am or like you are, is that we already kind of know the outcome. Other sports, we don't. Like football, look at the AFC right now. We don't know who we think we know, but it could be two of three teams, right? In the NFC side, it feels way more wide open. But the NBA feels very set on the Western Conference side, right? Where the Lakers, Clippers, unless there's injuries, they'll be in the Western Conference Final. It'll be in Los Angeles, obviously, all seven games. It's going to be a great series. So as a Lakers fan, I'm like, you know, catch them here and there. But whatever, they'll meet again in June, whatever the Western Conference Finals is, late May, and I'll watch then.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way a lot of people do. And you know, we've talked about this before when we've hosted. There's 82 games in a regular season of NBA basketball, so one out of 82 just doesn't feel that important. Maybe for bragging rights, but even so, these aren't the bragging rights that matter. Winning on December the 25th is not the bragging rights that matter ultimately. However, Kawhi Leonard does tend to show up in situations like that. 11 of 19 from the floor, 5 of 7 from beyond the arc. As you said, 8 of 8 from the free throw line, 35 and 12 if you need him. That's just what he does. He's an absolute killer, and it's amazing why anybody would root against, or not root against him, but bet against him at this point in time. And yeah, you're right. We're going to get Clippers, Lakers. That's what we are going to get. But we'll get you caught up on all the scores from yesterday's games and talk about what you've seen. Another thing we're going to do today is look at the best of the decade and the best of the year in sports. I put together some lists of teams and coaches and storylines that maybe you've forgotten. This is the final time you will hear from us before New Year's. We will be together again hosting this program on New Year's Day, just as 2020 begins. We'll have other business to talk about there in terms of the NFL playoffs, what's going to happen in the college football championship game, because the semis are Saturday, and we will discuss those during this show as well. You look up, and yeah, those two semifinal games.
Caught up fast to us.
It sure did. So we've got a lot of things to kind of talk about. We are going to reminisce a little bit, and we're going to bring everybody in that's with us today as part of the Outkick crew, so it should be a fun day. If you want to join the program and speak, it's 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. We'll be right back. This is Outkick the Coverage. Hope your Christmas was good. We can't complain here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
A little Temple of the Dog for you. Maybe you need a little Hair of the Dog if you had too much eggnog yesterday. It's Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin in for Clay Travis. Clay's back tomorrow to finish up the week. Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at JMartZone. We're at 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. We're also brought to you by TrueCar. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people pay for the car you want so you can recognize that perfect price When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Jeff, how was the food the last couple of days?
It was good. I had my Chinese food yesterday, you know, the Jewish tradition on Thanksgiving. By the way, the Chinese food place I went to was packed. Like, I ordered,
of course it was.
But more than I thought it would be. I mean, obviously, it's not only Jewish people there. I mean, it took an hour to get just one. I ordered one thing for myself. I called ahead, but it was wild. So, yeah, it was good. We didn't eat terribly different than we normally would have. But food was good, man. It was good.
Well, I always need to ask you about what you're eating, even though, I mean, a lot of people have big spreads like it's Thanksgiving part two.
Well, we went last night. I was working a little bit yesterday afternoon on the radio, and my wife and kids went over to a friend's house. And so I went over to their house at night, and they had like a ham, and they had the macaroni and the Brussels sprouts and the rolls and all that. So they had all that fun stuff over there. We just didn't really have a party at the house. So, we didn't make anything special for the holidays. I mean, Sunday night, I made the latkes and whatnot for Hanukkah, but did you have something special? So do you, I know that you've obviously lost all your weight. Do you still, like, go hard on Christmas?
I went fairly hard, I think. I'm always a little bit cautious even around the holidays, I mean, we had Christmas at my parents' house on Christmas Eve and her parents yesterday, and both of them cooked, both our mothers cooked, and they cooked really nice spreads. And so there were casseroles both days. My mom made a chicken casserole and sweet potatoes with pecans and all sorts of stuff like that, and a strawberry poke cake. And then yesterday her mom had made a new recipe she had found, a cauliflower casserole, which was very solid. And then, you know, some of the staples that you would expect. There was ham and turkey. And so, I mean, there were like three different meals at three different places this week that we had. And then there were desserts. And my wife is a ridiculous baker. So there's always a chance of sweets around this time of year. So you just kind of have to. Nice. What I do is, like, I got a plate of four or five different desserts and I ate like two bites of each because I just wanted a taste of all of it. That's the way you save it. And then we mitigated everything by. We went for a 4.5 mile run yesterday. I'm training for a half marathon that I'm going to do in Nashville in April.
There you go.
I don't know why I decided to do that, but I'm doing the St. Jude Rock and Roll Marathon.
Cause you're new,
that they do at the end of April here.
You're a new man. You're married now. You got new priorities in life. I will say with desserts, my wife's dad and wife came over yesterday. And first of all, my father-in-law brought me 4 2-inch strip steaks and said, Merry Christmas, which was a great gift.
Nice.
Those are all, they're freeze sealed and marinated, ready for the sous vide eventually. They brought over a pecan pie from Costco. Oh my, that was pretty good. Now
they make some big pies at Costco. Oh, it was, like, you look at it, it's like, oh, this will feed the room.
It's probably the most sugar I've ever tasted in one dessert. It's very good.
We had a buttermilk pie last night. It was the first time I've had one of those. It was a buttermilk pie with cinnamon roasted pecans on top of it. It was tremendous. And my wife made a chocolate ganache peppermint pie, which was fantastic as well. So, I mean, we had the run on some desserts. She made an Andes mint brownie set on Sunday for another family deal. Like, we were rolling in it when it comes to that stuff. You just got to be careful. Like, you got to make sure you're not eating. Like, you can ruin yourself real carefully. But at some point, if you're going to do it, the holidays are the time to do it.
Yeah, and my wife made a bread for the first time, like homemade bread. I mean, she came home the other day. Because she got off work early on Tuesday with like a bunch of stuff to make a bunch of desserts. And that's not like her. She doesn't really ever bake. And she just tried to start baking away. So it was nice for a change. But we didn't eat too crazy, no. It's nice. I'll tell you, the best part was being, I had no work Tuesday night. So we had a great family night. We played some board games and my son won Trouble. He loved it.
Nice.
And, it was fun. Good holiday spirit.
Celtics over the Raptors by 16. Jaylen Brown had 30. Bucks and Sixers had a nice little matchup. Sixers looked good in that game. Yes. Embiid had 31 and 11. If you're beating the Bucks at this point, that's always impressive. Warriors beat the Rockets. Here we go again. I'm telling you, the Rockets are just going to disappoint you when it matters most, because that's what James Harden teams do, despite the fact that he only had 24 points yesterday. We talked about Clippers, Lakers a minute. And then Pelicans, Nuggets in that last window. You know they thought they had something, and then Zion wasn't there, so it didn't matter. Pelicans won the game, but it's only their ninth win of the season. This Zion thing is getting real interesting. In terms of whether or not we're going to see him at all this year.
I mean, if I were the Pelicans, I would exercise extreme caution with wanting to bring him back. I mean, there's no point to rush him back any earlier than he has to be. Even if you think he's ready, there's probably, you know, a case to be made that you even wait even longer, right? I mean, other than just the NBA wanting to see him play and fans, there's no reason to bring him back. By the way, did we miss, like, Daryl Morey, the Rockets GM, issue some excuse last night? Like, the referees were being bad, or their game was under protest, or if they did the wrong calculations and lost the game? Because every time they lose to the Warriors, there's some sort of, like, thing about how it wasn't fair or something else happened and the numbers said so that they should have won. Did we see that yet today?
No, I have not. Oh, okay. He hasn't tweeted in 6 days.
I'm surprised.
Daryl Morey is saying a lot less these days.
And the last time they lost, it was all about how the numbers showed they'd win like 6 out of 10 times. And I was like, all right, well.
You can rely on analytics, but you can't say we should have won based on the analytics. Like, you can't then point to that as, well, we won on paper. All that's going to do is upset your fans. That's right up there with the NFL telling your team the day after, yeah, we blew that call. Or the NBA saying, yeah, we blew that call that cost your team the game. It's like, what is that going to accomplish at this rate? Did you lose the game or did you win the game? And the answer is you lost the game. And you lost the game to Golden State, another game that, you know, they probably thought was going to be pretty good at the time. And it turned out to be pretty competitive. But the Warriors are 8-24. It ain't good. If I'm them, I'm shutting Steph Curry down for the entire season. There's no reason. The reason why there's no reason, as you said, to rush Zion Williamson back is because they're not going to win with him. There's no reason to rush him now. You can start him out next year. Now, if you can't sell a single ticket, then I guess that has to be a factor, but you want to be able to sell tickets for the next 5 or 6 years. If you can keep him longer than that, then great. You don't want to sacrifice it this year when the Pelicans ain't going to be in the mix. It's right. Not going to matter at all. Brandon Ingram had a nice day last night, had 31 and 7. It's weird because when all these moves were being made during the offseason and free agency was so bonkers and there was over $3 billion of money that was moved around, and we all talked about parity and we talked about pairs and we talked about teams with multiple superstars in like 10 or 11 different places and how the regular season was finally going to matter. And all of that was true. And the ratings are down across the board. And they're down, I guess, just because that idea of parity didn't matter as much as we thought it did. When you don't have enough dominant teams, or if there's too much parity, or these guys just aren't deemed to be superstars in the mass public's eyes. You've got your LeBron, you've got your Anthony Davis, you've got your Kawhi Leonard, you've got a handful of guys, but most people they're not coming out of their seats for Nikola Jokic. Even though he's really good, I don't think people are doing that. I'm not even sure people are coming out of their seats for Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and some of those guys. There is a very small number of guys that move the needle in the NBA. For a time, there was just one. And then you had the Warriors kind of rise up. That's a problem for the NBA. They can keep talking about, you know, midseason tournaments and play-ins and reseeding and shortening the regular season. But if they're only going to shorten it, Jeff, by 6 games, that ain't enough.
No.
There's too much basketball. There's too much NBA basketball for most people to think that each individual game matters. Like I said, we mentioned this in the last segment. An NFL game is 1/16th of a pizza pie.
Right.
A college football game is even less.
Right.
An NBA game is 1/82nd. Like, any game never feels like it's I must sit down and watch this because it's going to have tremendous impact. It doesn't until it's teams that are clawing for seeds at the very end of the year.
Correct. And so the lack of sense of urgency, which is what makes the NFL and college football so great, is not there in the NBA, which makes it tough for, I think, casual fans to watch every single game that's being played. I mean, like I said, I think me and you would be on the casual fan side. Now, obviously, when the finals come around, the playoffs, we dive into the NBA, in more hardcore fashion. But, you know, my life consumed with football right now. And I think a lot of people are kind of in the same boat as me. And I think the foregone conclusion of the way the NBA has gone the last couple of years, just like we talked about in the first segment, you know, LeBron and the Lakers, Anthony Davis are going to meet the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. It's already happening. We know that. We know the Bucks with Giannis are going to be in the Eastern Conference Final. Just the way, you know, the best players typically are on the teams go to the finals of each conference. So we know that already, right? We know that that's going to happen. So it dissuades people from wanting to watch. I also think that there's no villain anymore, right? The Warriors were a team that was kind of filled that role of villain, right? They had guys on the team that people liked, but also, you know, they were cocky, right? They were, they talked a lot. You know, Draymond Green is hitting dudes where he shouldn't hit them. And they were a team that everyone looked forward to beating and taking down, taking off their throne. And we don't have that team right now. You know, maybe it's LeBron, but I feel like it's the older he gets, the less people dislike him, at least openly. And third is the time zones, right? I mean, most of the best teams are on the West Coast right now, and it's hard to get that those people on the East Coast tuning into a game. I mean, look, Jason, who on the East Coast, or at least Eastern time zone, for an NBA team, if it's on, are you going to watch? Do you have to watch?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, you'd want Philadelphia to get there. I don't think that they're quite there yet, at least not in the mainstream eyes. I mean, and the Bucks, I don't know what it is, but there's something about them that they're just going to keep on going under the radar
because
for
Giannis,
most people.
Okay, if you were, you know, a normal person walking down the street, not normal, but like, you know, an NBA fan, and obviously his size might give it away, but I mean, people wouldn't know who Giannis was.
Right. Yes. And then, you know, the Celtics being good again and seeming to have really good chemistry with Kemba Walker out there and them being renewed, that could certainly help if they're able to make a run. And they're a good basketball team as well.
But again,
that would help.
Who is the star you're tuning in to watch?
Yeah, it's all in the West, and it means you have a weaker lead in. I mean, I would say maybe the biggest star in the East could be Embiid if they were able to take that next step. I don't know that they have taken it yet. I mean, you know, even the best rookies are in the West Coast right now as well. So it's not helping things at all.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Local H, as we welcome you back to the Geico Outkick Studios. If you want to hear something amazing, maybe Bound for the Floor is amazing to you. But Discover definitely is. They match all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically with no limit to how much they'll match. Millions of people a year getting that cash back matched. It is Discover Cashback Match. What are you waiting for? Learn more. The website, discover.com/cashback match. Clay Travis will finish up your week tomorrow. We'll be back in on New Year's Day. Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin. But we are with you for the next couple of hours here on Fox Sports Radio. Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at J Mart Zone. Jeff, how do you feel about the replay last night with Pat Beverly and LeBron James and just how those things are adjudicated with the final two-minute rule?
Okay, so I feel that there's a spirit of replay, right? So and this is the same way I feel for all sports. You go on my Twitter, at Jeff Schwartz, I feel the same way about baseball, the same way about football. You know, especially in baseball, when you know, the area rule around second base, and you know if a guy slides into home and his you know, his heel is like a paper, you know, like a paper length away from home plate, right? I mean, like guy's safe, okay? Is the spirit of replay review, in my opinion, and I know people disagree with me, is to fix egregious no calls, right? Egregious errors that are made by officiating, someone not seeing something. That's the spirit of replay. What that was last night is not the spirit of replay. And if you go to Royce Young's Twitter, he writes for the NBA at Royce Young, he kind of discussed it as well. And he retweeted a tweet that Monty McCutcheon, who is I think vice president of officiating or of officiating development, has stated that the competition committee for the NBA has discussed making these calls be out on the player who caused the ball to go out, not the offensive player who replay shows grazed the ball last. Because we know that if you're holding a basketball and someone knocks out of your hand, it's probably going to hit your hand last on the way out of bounds. I mean, just the way physics and the way you hold the ball works, right? But we know that's off on the other player. And my issue with a lot of this, too, is the timing. So why is it more important at 3 seconds and not at 2 minutes and 1 second where they can't review this? You know, in the NFL, I understand that people will say, well, the NFL does the same thing. But under 2 minutes, the game of the NFL changes, right? There's different clock rules. It's different situationally. People handle it different. I get why the NFL decides to review everything inside of 2 minutes, but you're also allowed to challenge things outside of 2 minutes, right? At your discretion. The NBA is the ruling the same. They play the same game inside of 2 minutes that they play the rest of the contest. I don't think the replay review was put in to see if the ball grazed off of LeBron's pinky with three seconds left in the game. That to me doesn't feel like the spirit of the review.
Well, you're going to upset some people if you try to make that rule change. If you try to change that to, all right, well, it was knocked out of his hand, so it's off the guy who knocked it out of his hand, people are going to lose their minds over that. I understand what you're saying, though. I understand the spirit of the rule shouldn't be that it grazed off. But it did technically touch that person. So there's
LeBron is going to shoot the ball. Pat Beverly knocks that out of his hand. And, of course, it's going to roll off LeBron as the way it goes out. Like, I don't understand. I just don't think that this is why replay was put into existence to fix. This is not an egregious error, in my opinion, that needs to be fixed via replay review. And, again, why is this more important now than it was 2 minutes beforehand? This could have been, LeBron could have attempted a big three with 2 minutes and 1 second left in the game. Same thing happens. You know, like, and I don't know. I just don't like it.
And that's all Jeff Schwartz has to say about that. When we come back, year in review, decade in review. It's going to be fun here on Outkick.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Second hour of three here today, the day after Christmas. Getting towards the end of the decade, not just the end of the year. It's going to be 2020, less than a week from today. Clay's back tomorrow. We're coming to you live from the Geico Outkick Studios. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. Also brought to you today by TrueCar. When it comes to selling or trading in your car, you need to make good choices. And with TrueCar, you've got a star on your roster. So when you're ready to sell or trade in that car, check out TrueCar. True cash offer, not available in all areas. Jeff Schwartz, down in Charlotte, North Carolina. At Jeff Schwartz, I'm Jason Martin, at JMartZone. Sitting here watching, I guess, the end or now highlights of some of the games yesterday in the NBA, and Brian Finley saying the Pelicans have won two games in a row. I feel like that was a slight towards the Pelicans. Pretty well done, just kind of understated. Yeah, it was well played. So we're going to look at the year. We're going to look at the decade. We have so much. I put a list together, and it just kept on growing of things that happened this decade. And I think maybe we can build to that. Well, let's start with, I don't know if I want to start with something a little bit off the beaten path or if I want to start with something. No, we'll start with something easy. And everybody's microphones are open. Bo Benson, Chris Perfett, Brian Finley, if he's near, I hope his mic's open as well. Dub Yarbrough here, his mic's open. He's in control of it, so his mic's probably always on when he wants it to be. But we haven't heard from him today, but we will. And, of course, our microphones are open as well. So let's start with this one. What is the team of the decade? When you look at everything, and I really only wrote three down. I don't know if I should tell you what I wrote down or if we should just start to debate this and discuss it and see if you guys come up with all three of those or if we do during the course of the discussion. And if you want to discuss this with us and tell us what we're missing out on or what we get wrong or what we get right, you can certainly tweet us at JMartZone, at Jeff Schwartz, or call us at 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. So over the last 10 years, Jeff, when I say team of the decade in American sports, what's the name that first comes to mind?
Well, there's two, and that's the Patriots and the Warriors.
Okay. You got two of my three, right?
And there's a third that I don't think people will ever mention. And I'm not even sure it's on your list. And I'm not even sure that people care about this. But the San Francisco Giants won three World Series.
Oh, Jeff.
And that, I mean, they were the best team of the decade in baseball. What do you want me to tell you? Another one's probably Alabama, if you were to do this.
Yes, that was my third.
But, the Giants won three World Series in 5 years. They won the most World Series in the decade. No? Doesn't count? I mean, they're boring
Jeff,
as can be.
Your fandom's hanging out. You might want to put that back in.
They're boring as can be, but, I mean, they have to be up on that list. No?
I guess so. I was trying
the
to
Patriots
think of a team
three
in the
World
decade
Series
in baseball.
In this decade.
I couldn't get one.
Three Super Bowls in the decade.
Okay. But the Giants haven't been relevant in a minute either.
Correct. I know. I knew that.
Patriots, Warriors, Alabama are the three that I came up with. Yes. Is there anybody who has an open microphone right now who is saying, hey, you should also include this team? I know Clay would be angry because we're not mentioning WNBA franchises right now.
I'll just say this about, I think Clemson will be the team of the decade for this next one.
Maybe, yeah. I almost put Clemson down, but it was more of a, you know, last 3-4 years where that's really become a thing, which is a decent stretch of time. But if you're just going to pick one, it's still Alabama. I mean, this is the first year that they have not made the college football playoff, and it took basically injuring Tua Tagovailoa to do it. Now, maybe they would have lost to Auburn anyway. I think they would have lost to LSU and did lose to LSU with Tua on the field. But Alabama has been the team. So of those three, Patriots, Warriors, Alabama, which one of that rises to the top of the list?
I mean, I think what the Patriots have done as far as sustained success the entire decade, winning their division every single year, you know, getting to, was it, 8 straight AFC title games, and in a sport, by the way, that all the other sports say they promote parity. The NFL actually does. The way that they draft, the way that the salary cap is set up, the way that everything is done in the NFL is to set up that your team goes 8-8, and the longevity of the Patriots, to me, makes them an easy answer.
All right. Someone out there, we'll have Dub talk. Dub, where are you on this debate of Patriots, Warriors, Alabama, and who are we forgetting? And no, it's not the San Antonio Spurs.
I'm aware of my teams that I follow, unlike our co-host here today with the Giants. But to me, it's hard not to say New England. The first team that did come to my head was the Warriors, just because their dominance was undeniable, even though it wasn't as long, maybe as the complete decade, if you want to make that argument, the first maybe 2 or 3 years.
If they had beaten LeBron in that one finals, if LeBron had never gotten that championship in Cleveland, I think they'd have a stronger case. But the fact that they lost that one and lost this past season may have hurt them.
Yeah, I agree. And I just pulled something up. The NFL, every NFL team's record over this past decade, the Patriots are obviously number one at 125-34. Second place is the Steelers at 102-56.
So another 20-some games.
So that is a huge gap between number one and number two over the past 10 years. So for me, I think the answer is pretty clearly the New England Patriots here.
Jeff, 125-34. How absurd is that in the NFL?
That's incredible. And that goes to kind of my point about the dominance they've had. And I get their division, you know, is not the best. It's improved the last couple of years with the Bills being better. But there's a lot of NFL teams that just lose games. And you mentioned the Steelers. Right? How often have the Steelers lost games as double-digit favorites? I mean, right? Like they routinely have lost games they should have won. New England never has that problem. And like that's what makes them different than I think all other teams in the NFL, is that they don't drop games they shouldn't lose very often. Now, last year was a year where they kind of did that, right? Lions and
Titans.
Lost to Titans. Now this year they've lost to really only the best teams in the AFC. But it typically is not what they've done, right? They don't give games away. And like I said, their ability to win in a league that really does not promote as much winning as the Patriots have done makes it even more remarkable. All the players they've had, all the transactions that they've made, and it all comes down to Brady and Belichick just being that much better at their job than everyone else's.
Let me ask this follow-up question, and we'll get some of the thoughts from the guys out in L.A. Who was the team of last decade? Was it the same?
How many championships did the Spurs? I mean,
Spurs would be in the mix last time. It would have been
the Lakers
Spurs
won
and...
five titles. Yeah. Last decade. I think I'm
Spurs,
right on that.
Spurs, Lakers, but the Patriots would have still been in that mix, correct?
The Patriots had won three in that decade. Yeah. But they won those really early. You know, the Lakers won, what, 2001 and 2, and then won in 9 and 10. So probably the Lakers?
Hmm. I mean, the Patriots also went to a Super Bowl that they lost when they were undefeated.
07, yeah.
During that decade.
And the Lakers went to 6 because they lost to the Pistons, remember, too. They went to 7 because they lost to the Celtics. They went to 7 finals in 10 years.
Okay. You might be able to make a case for the Lakers last decade. But just the idea that the Patriots were in the mix for this same discussion last decade and maybe are the clear winner this decade indicates a lot.
It's absolutely crazy. Like, it cannot be stated enough how remarkable. We'll never, ever see a run like this ever again in professional football. Never happen again.
Who's most responsible for it?
As far as between Brady and Belichick?
I mean, I know they both deserve plenty of credit. Kraft deserves credit as well. I've always been on the side of the coach, not the player, a little bit more in this case, because I've seen Belichick also win with Matt Castle, and I've seen him win with defense over the last season and a half, where Brady's skills maybe haven't like dropped off a cliff or anything, but that offense just hasn't been the same with Gronk not playing and dealing with injuries and things like that. Belichick just seems to be so much smarter than absolutely everybody else that I give more to him than I do Tom Brady, even though I think Tom Brady is every bit as good as his highest fans would say.
Yeah, probably Belichick. I mean, his ability to film sidelines and things like that.
Low-hanging fruit, Jeff.
Even though I think that in the NFL admitted that, or at least Pro Football Talk said that the NFL is having a hard time coming up with actual evidence that they committed wrongdoing, which is exactly what I said when this happened. I think it's probably Belichick. I think Brady obviously is up there. I mean, he's been able to cover up a lot of warts in the last couple of years with player personnel. But as far as the scheme and just the building the identity, the do-your-job stuff, I mean, that's Belichick all the way.
All right, L.A., whoever wants to talk out in L.A. because I can't see you and point to you or call you by name, where would you be on this spectrum of Patriots, Warriors, Alabama? Would that be your order? And I would say if you want to make one argument for the Warriors, it is that we did not really see it coming and what they did changed the sport entirely. This decade and what basketball looks like today and what it looked like 5 or 6 years ago, vastly different. And it's mainly because of what Golden State did that changed it, and in particular what Steph Curry did.
Yeah, but like, weren't you kind of left wanting after that? Like, they lost in 16. They could have gone 73-9, and then they lost last year due to injury, but still, it's just like the Heat, or like you feel like they should have won more than they actually did.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
You're on the Patriots side as well.
I think it's the Patriots, but also like I am going to come to Jeff's defense, and this is actually very, very hard for me to do as a Dodgers fan.
No.
But you have to. The Giants have to be up there as one of the top teams this decade. They won 3 rings in the most difficult sport to win a championship in.
Yeah, they also won 3 rings in a sport nobody cares about.
Wow.
I mean, if your Braves had won a World Series, that you might put them in this list. But
yeah, we won in '95.
That hasn't happened. Yeah,
I'm still excited about '95. I'm still going back and excited that we won one.
Dodger fans are pumped about 1988. I hear it all the time. I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, the most excited fan base of the championship hasn't won in 30 years.
I'm trying to help you here, Jeff. Come on.
No, I mean, look, I think the Giants would be 4th on that list of the 3 teams we've mentioned.
Yeah. Would you say Warriors are 2nd, or do you like Alabama over Golden State?
I think Alabama.
Hmm.
Alabama and New England are just 2 football dynasties this last decade that, like, they, you know, it felt like they both won every single year, even if they didn't.
Does Kevin Durant
they're definitely in the mix.
Does Kevin Durant go into the Warriors cheapen, in your mind, their dynasty?
it cheapens his legacy.
Yeah.
I don't know that it cheapens them because we saw what they could do without him. And then, well, I mean, if anything cheapened their legacy, it's how they played when he went down. It's almost as if exactly. Like the whole, it was weird. Well, they played better after they realized they could play better. At first, they just stood around and watched him play when he was on the floor. And I think that's what made them likable to unlikable just as much as anything else. And they did have some personalities there. Chris, you usually have some good thoughts as well. Where are you on this? Are you full Patriots as well as pretty much everybody else here?
It's impossible. I mean, I know the division plays a point, but it is impossible to look anywhere in the NFL and see a team win its division for 10 years, for the entire decade. Even before the decade, they won in 09 as well. That was like that's what started their streak. They've won that division every season now for over 10 seasons. They've gone to as many Super Bowls as they can in a sport that claims that it is the sport with the most parity. For them to just completely break that scale, to just completely just demolish it, it speaks to the fact that they, I believe, Bill Belichick's going to go down as one of the greatest coaches of all time. I mean, Nick Saban's going to probably go down as probably one of the greatest coaches in the college scene as well. But Bill Belichick, to do what he's been doing in the NFL, with all the devices the NFL has in place to try to force parity onto these teams, it brings nothing but admiration. It writes the argument for itself, and I don't see any other way that you can say other than for the Patriots. For in college, you're allowed to keep getting richer. In the NFL, you really can't. And yep. Somehow the Patriots have taken scraps and been able to just make kingdoms out of it.
That's a good point. That's well said.
I think that's a credit to Jeff Schwartz and his Giants as well, because there are some years where I look at those Giants rosters and I'm just thinking, how are they doing this? Because one year they will be great, and then the next year with almost the same roster, they'll be at the bottom of the National League West. So, I mean, it's a riddle there. But in the case of the Patriots, it's a riddle they figured out every year.
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed this before, Jeff. How many times have the Patriots not been the most talented team and still ended up winning the Super Bowl and carrying the Lombardi Trophy home? It's happened more than once.
Okay, are you betting against them in the playoffs this year?
No.
I'm not either. I'm a Chiefs fan.
I've been beating this too much. I have the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, but at the same time, I still don't. I don't know. Like, I have been caught with my pants down too often when it comes to the Patriots. Ooh, I got it right once. I picked the Eagles.
Yeah. Please keep your pants on, Jason. So
I look better these days. But yeah, you're right. I picked the Falcons. It was one of the smartest things. I said the Falcons were going to blow them out in the Super Bowl. Fourth quarter of that game, Clay Travis sends me a message, and he's like, hey, we're going to get that audio pulled. You got this thing dead right. We're going to play that tomorrow. Hour later.
He texted you during the game?
You're a moron. Yes.
See, he did. You know, he did that to me too. He jinxed me in a playoff game in 2013 when we were up 38-10 against the Colts and lost that game.
Oh, God, that game!
And he texted me in the middle of the game. I got it when I got there. It said like, "Great win today."
Well, like I said, he told me that I was brilliant. And then an hour later, he's like, "Total idiot, bonehead, should have known better." Came back from 28-3. I was pretty much right. And except that I turned out to be completely wrong. I think we got somebody else out in L.A. that wants to chime in. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, guys. I wanted to say, how about, I know we're not talking about this, but how about the Seahawks and the transcendent effect that Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and Marshawn Lynch have done? I mean, I was looking at their stats. They've been in the playoffs 8 of the last 10 years. They've been at 2 Super Bowls in that stretch. They're about to be going to a third, and then when they get to that third, Lynch is going to get that redemption because they're actually going to run the ball at the goal line.
Don't do this. Don't start with this again because they made the right call passing. We've been over this many times. They made the right call. They ran the wrong pass play, but they were not going to run the football there.
About the Seahawks overall, but the problem is they only cashed it in one time.
If Beast Mode gets 20 yards on Sunday, I'd be pumped.